Hi, and welcome back to the Childhood Development Initiative's Restorative Practice podcast, where we talk all things RP. For this second season, we resume visiting communities and organisations to collect stories from practitioners around Ireland. We talk to young people, teachers, lecturers, youth and community workers, and restorative practices trainers to gather their insights on the impact of RP in their life and work. Each episode is focusing either on a place with several voices or on a practitioner. If you are not familiar with restorative practices, the restorative approach, the restorative questions, and the work CDI does, you can listen to the first episode of season one of our podcast series where it is all explained.
Hi, I'm Dorothy Danew, Restorative Practice Quality Specialist for CDI, and I'm delighted to be back on the road for this second season of Circles of Connection. For this episode, I met Michelle Stowe, founder and director of ConnectRP, a service for teachers and schools which offers training and support in co-creating relational school communities. Michelle has been widely mentioned by teachers in this podcast and is certainly a very inspiring and much-loved figure in the RP world in Ireland. We focused our conversation on her experience of working with schools, the obstacles and enablers of whole school implementation, how to support participants in this shift of culture RP require, and the lessons she gathered from her wide experience. So thank you very much, Michelle, for agreeing to take part in that podcast. I'm delighted to be here and to have this conversation with you. Please, could you introduce yourself to our listeners and maybe also talk about ConnectRP?
Absolutely. Thank you, Dorothy. I'm delighted to get the chance to have the chat today too, especially because I'm such a huge fan of CDI and they were a huge part of my own restorative journey. So it's gorgeous to get the chance to share on their podcast. Michelle Stowe is my name. I always say I'm a teacher at heart, still think of myself as a teacher. And now I guess I get to teach people about restorative practice and learn, you know, around restorative practice and the work I get to do. I was a teacher from St. Mark's there beside CDI in Tallaght West, and that's where I began my own journey as a practitioner. And now I guess I mostly work with schools who want to go on that long-term journey, you know, around co-creating relational school communities, that kind of holistic implementation piece. And it's a real privilege. I love it. I feel like I'm doing what I'm meant to do in the world, you know. It's a real honour, I guess, to get to do the restorative work that I do.
Thank you very much. So you work on with school on 3 years plan to implement restorative ethos, and as you said yourself, co-create relational school communities. And so we met different schools in the podcast in the season one and in this season. So I think listeners can start to have a bit of an overview of how it can look like after a few years when the work has been done. And so from your experience, what are the enablers and obstacles in this work? What do you find in school communities that make this work sometimes easier or sometimes more challenging?
Yeah. Look, I'm still learning myself all the time, that's for sure. But I think, it's gorgeous to work with schools in that deep way, with that long-term commitment. And I guess in that respect, it's really about that idea of, you know, that culture, restorative culture, relational culture. And there's loads of enablers and barriers. I guess when I think about enablers, I'm thinking about, you know, when, you know, being the change you want to see, when you have an internal champion or a number of champions working together, and a community discovers this is something they really care about, I think that's a huge enabler. So I guess building the capacity of a team internally, I think, is key for sustainability and leadership. In my old life, I'd kind of go from school to school to school and they'd be like, when Shell comes in, you know, we're doing the RP day. And I don't think that's helpful. I think it can be a nice entry point. But when you're looking for sustainability, you have to build the internal leadership and distribute that leadership. So I think it's really important where we have, the school leaders who are on board, who are shining a light. I think what we shine a light on matters, shining a light on this, investing time, energy, resources. But to distribute that leadership is key for enabling others to light the way and to bring others with us. So I think a team first and foremost needs to kind of develop their own capacity. Sometimes schools rush in and they think it's about, let's do this with kids. Let's do this, you know, with parents or others. And really, I think we need to be thinking and looking at ourselves. Staff first and foremost, students will come and go and parents will come and go, and they're a huge part of the architecture of a school, but for sure, I guess the staff, building our own capacity, our own relational thinking, what are we modeling, how are we showing up, I think it's really, really key. And enablers, if a staff are working restoratively amongst one another, that's also really key. So, for example, in our staff meetings, in our gatherings, how relational a space is that? How much equity of voice is there? What's the safety there? And I think that's really, really key, first and foremost. And I think if a team focuses initially on their own practice and supporting one another with their own restorative journey, not a one and done, not a train and hope for the best, but actually growing and implementing it, being reflective together about our experiences and growing that kind of relational thinking and also the conflict literacy skills over time, that's really key. And then I think a team might be ready then to move to that implementation piece where we're trying to, I say, share the RP love, but bringing it to perhaps others on staff and then indeed other stakeholders. I think that's really important. But I think, you know, Gregory and Evans, Dr. Cathy Evans, she's an associate professor in the Mennonite University there. And she was one of our keynote speakers at our Connect RP conference on Saturday. And she herself and Gregory, I'm thinking what her first name has gone from my head. But they created a lovely article called The Misimplementation Model. And I think, again, I've been guilty of it myself. Guilty is the wrong word, but, you know, misguided at times. And we'll make mistakes, you know, there's no perfect formula because this is about relationships and every setting will be unique. But in their misimplementation model guide, you know, when we look at the obstacles, I think that idea of, as I mentioned, train and hope for the best, I don't think that creates that sustainable approach. They talked about it being under-resourced. So, for example, it is a big investment of resources, of money, of time, which is our most precious resource of all in schools. So needing to invest time and energy in the implementation, but also, you know, as Dorothy, you and I often talk about the importance of reflective practice. So creating a space where we can reflect together. And school life isn't built for that. So it needs to be innovative and solution focused around it. In my school context, we have what we call the B or P hive. And really that was based on my own research when I started many years ago as a teacher, as a champion of my gorgeous school, St. Mark's. I'd become a trainer with CDI and gathering a group of interested people. And we were doing it at lunchtime. In actual fact, we did it every Monday lunchtime for 3 years, hand on heart. You know, we brought the goodies and the tea and but we were just reflecting, like, how did we get on this week? You know, what went well? Where are our challenges? How can we kind of support one another? You know, when you're backed against the wall and you can't see a way out, being solution focused. So really implementing it, honouring that restorative approach, implementing it in community. So as I mentioned, I think that reflective space often needs to be created. Sometimes they do it in the morning, before school, at lunchtime. However, I do think if a school is seeking to implement this strategically, they'll also create timetable planning and implementation spaces for such a team. And I think, again, the schools that I've seen have done that. It's probably not easy, but the schools that create that planning time on the timetable have much more success. I think another barrier, and again, Gregory and Evans talked about in their misimplementation, is where we have a narrow focus. So, for example, schools on that journey think, okay, we have an issue with, we want to minimise suspensions. And we're thinking, oh, restorative practice, this is going to be great for addressing our bullying situations in our school, or something will work with students. And I think when we have a narrow focus, we don't take that holistic approach. And of course, as I always say, you know, if we're going to address bullying in a restorative way, With a restorative lens, we have to build the capacity to do that. If the first time a parent hears about this restorative practice, what? And the love of their life has just been involved in an issue in the yard. You know, we've to build goodwill in good times. And again, that takes that holistic focus. We have to build a bit of safety around these processes. And that can take a lot of time. And I think when we work proactively, again, building that relational culture and, you know, we do loads of, again, at our conference last week, we were talking about that, those whole school positive initiatives, you know, and we think about restorative practice around good relationships and a support when there's a breakdown. I think that builds that little bit of reservoir to support us where we need the safety around these processes in times of challenge. And I think so a school needs to take that kind of holistic approach. And I guess lastly, when Greg and Evans were talking about the misimplementation, they spoke about the idea that it is a paradigm shift. So sometimes when schools don't fully embrace or understand that it's not tips and tricks to get the kids to behave, that it's not, well, look, we'll try that. I tried the ORP question. It didn't work. So we reverted back to our suspensions. Right. And I think it is, listen, I'm still undergoing that journey myself, hand on heart. I mean that really sincerely. And when I was doing my research, that really came to light because we were a group of interested teachers. We were giving up our free time. We were all about it. And on our first cycle, I thought we do the cycle, tick the box, we've covered circles, fair process, we've covered the questions, and then we'll work with a different group the following cycle. But what actually emerged was we continued on our own journey, not for more content, but to find meaning within that knowledge in our own practice. I think that is really key. If we are seeking that paradigm shift, the BRP hive, the reflective practice, is essential to navigate that. And I think that's the most complicated part because you'll have a school with a policy in place, perhaps. And, you know, we have those, that punitive way of thinking is deeply embedded in our culture, you know. And I think it is a long-term journey to navigate away from it. And I think in a CPD session, when we're all feeling good, we'll nod our heads and say, yeah, relationships are so important. We'll say, yeah, I always think, you know, if you get involved in education, you didn't get in to get rich. You know, it's such a caring profession. We get into that space to make a difference, you know. But then what can happen sometimes is the life gets sucked out of us. We're backed against the wall. We've so many competing demands. It can be really hard. And that really came up, like I mentioned in our research, you know, reflecting on, you know, what is our measure of success here? Is it conformity or is it connection? And I think that doesn't happen in a CPD session where we're just nodding or raising our eyes to heaven if we are, but it happens when we're reflecting in our context of the moment, the live moment, which is, again, like I mentioned, the reflective practice for that paradigm shift. Sometimes, you know, schools can misunderstand what restorative practice is and we co-opt the practices to reinforce the existing structures, which are hierarchical. So if you didn't mind, I might give you an example where I'm in a school and they have a restorative detention, you know, and that restorative detention, it has the word restorative on it. And essentially the students are invited to sit in the same space, gather and answer the restorative questions on a sheet. And there's no relational interaction. And the intention of the questions is misunderstood there. So just writing questions that are called restorative, that's the scaffold for the empathy, for the connection, for accountability, for healing. And so that doesn't happen if 20 or 30 kids are sitting in a room answering questions that are called restorative. And that's an example, I guess, of that idea of co-opting. And look, I understand it's so hard. And listen, I've never led a school, you know, and I never could or would. So I can only understand and imagine the tension there. I had a gorgeous opportunity to share a keynote at Nancy Reinstein it was last year. So, but she wrote a book called The Circle in the Square. And her kind of book was about how a school, it might be square, our classrooms can be square, you know, our structures can be square and rigid. So I'm talking about circles. We're talking about the circles, right? So it doesn't fall totally in line. So we're trying to create a circle in a square, which means, you know, to do what we can and what we have available to us and trying to bring people with us on that restorative journey is essential. And so we can't just say, our policy says we're restorative. if we haven't brought people with us and supported us. And we can't just say that detention, it's restorative, it's just a label, you know. And so how are we living and breathing it? And again, that's why I love that I get to work with schools who are going on that long-term journey. We're co-learning, I'm learning all the time myself. They're actually the heroes live on the ground doing the work, and I see one another as a guide. We gather every month, the team leaders, to reflect. But a huge enabler, back to the enablers, is I think devising an action plan. So every month, you know, we have an action plan of five invitations, you know. And then, of course, we gather with one another. Where are our challenges? Where's our supports? Little reminders. And again, a principal creating a space right there, freed up for 90 minutes to work with me and the other team leaders. Huge enabler. And then I do the deep dive individually with the school to individualize it. So we're talking about small, consistent, iterative steps to respond to the live context we are in, as opposed to a training day in August or a training day for Crow Park. I think it's the small, consistent steps that we need. So I think that's the huge enabler.
But do you have, like, without, you know, giving your own tools that are part of what you do, but like, did you find format, tools, anything that is actually supporting people in that, reflection? So, okay, space, time, we gather, we share experiences, but sometimes even doing that, it's still difficult to move forward, to change, to find exactly what's going on in my practice that makes that I systematically get the same problem or the same, you know, or I'm stuck at the same place. So do you have have you managed to find tools that are helping people in that process?
Yeah. I'm laughing because as you were speaking, I was thinking, yeah, tea and biscuits. So every time people gather, what I would say is it has to, when we leave, our main intention is that we feel better when we left than when we arrived. So this is a space for feeling and being ORP, not for doing it. It's experiencing it. And I think that's really, really key. There'll be nothing more transformative for us as a staff, because I'm focusing on staff here, than a relational experience. So I think first and foremost, when we think about gathering these reflective spaces, the idea is that we're feeling and being what we're talking about doing or implementing in our class, right? So that's really key. And I think that's why having the warm space where it's not like you have to be here and you don't leave at five jobs. However, so the tea and the biscuits are a huge part of that, right? That we're living it one to another. Again, like you mentioned, a format. I think what's really helpful is for let's say in my context, our BRP hives are connected with my Restorative Me course. So there's a Restorative Me course that teachers are invited to explore. So again, we have our connect in, our connect deeper, our connect out, but they have, there's an invitation to reflect on an idea, a restorative idea or concept. Okay, so I think scaffolding that a little bit is really, really important. Here's an idea. And then the share is, well, what does that look like, sound like, feel like for me in my class, in my corridors, in my yard today or this week? Where were the gaps? How aligned do I actually feel with that idea myself personally? Like, here's an idea that, you know, I'm sharing, that Michelle is sharing perhaps about the restorative philosophy or a skill or a practice, but how much do I connect with that? I think that's really, really key. And another enabler, I think, or enabler, a scaffold in those spaces is there's an invitation. I call it a quest, you know, so it's your connect quest. And here's a quest, something practical, something tangible, something, an invitation to actually engage with that this week as a follow on. Now, again, like you very wisely shared, everyone's week will be different or whatever live problem we're having. But I think it is really important to have a structure and these invitations that are enabling. And I think that's one of the things my own personal gift might be, and I've many, 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 many deficits, right? And I've loads of other people that help me with things that I'm not great at. But because I feel I'm such a teacher at heart as well, I love schools, I'm very passionate about education, making this transferable to our pedagogy, to our way of how we teach, as well as tangible resources. Let's say accountability is such a huge part of that restorative paradigm shift, you know, from that punitive to restorative, but having like a problem solving wheel, having tangible things to help us navigate those tricky conversations or whatever. So I think that's what I probably feel I do best. And I spend most of my time doing now responding to and learning with the schools and the teams I work with to perhaps a need that might be there and thinking, well, how could we strategically put together something that might be supportive for that? And I think that having a structure where we feel better when we left than when we came, please God, or that might, that's not a guarantee, but it's an intention and an invitation to actually reflect on something in context and to do something to implementation pathways is key, I think, for growing that culture and that relational thinking in such a space.
It seems to me that there is a tension between the regimented life of young people in a school. So timetable, curricula, exams are very important in post-primary, hierarchy, a decision-making process that is, you know, rarely very, very consultative or very democratic. The constraints of the institution, and so a tension between all this and what RP promotes. So voluntary participation and consent, connection, accountability, collaboration, problem solving, and the idea of having choices. So, I was wondering how you navigate that tension. I mean, if you agree, like if you experience that tension yourself, and how you navigate it. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I fully relate to that tension. I think, you know, it's back to, as well, in some elements, the circle and the square, that idea that voluntary participation is essential for a restorative process. And yet we work in a school where, well, if you don't participate, what's the option then? Are you excluded or suspended, or what else can we do? And that's a reality of a tension that schools are working within, you know? And so I think within that, like I said, trying to maximize the culture, the reservoir where we're building trust around this approach, but essentially a parent could say, no, I don't want to be involved. And I think just acknowledging the truth of that is really key. And, you know, schools will have a policy in place, you know, for structures. And there'll be that tension between, I often think it's very healthy for schools to say we're growing our commitment to the use of restorative practice, as opposed to we are a restorative school. Schools are very quick to say we're a restorative school, and I think we're some of all our parts. And I think it's more healthy, maybe authentic, and to say we're a school growing our commitment to the use of restorative practice. And again, like I said, that's a long-term journey. So I think, you know, just acknowledging the truth of what you're saying, that tension is key. I also think that you know, that idea of democratic decision-making processes, I think trying to grow the capacity skills for that, but also that think, the relational thinking that's required. So, you know, am I the boss at the top and I just say that's the way it is, you know? Or are we, again, like promoting circles as part of the architecture of how we're sharing and growing for planning a trip, for thinking, what's the best way for us to do this lesson, you know, for tapping into the collective wisdom in the class, you know, for formative assessment. So in other words, my share and listen and talk and piece isn't something that we use, you know, for the one day that we're doing this, or for the one day where we're building a connection circle at the start of the year, or for the one day that we're doing, that we're responding to a big issue or a violent outburst or something, that we're using as part of our all day, every day way of engaging. I think that's key. And having structures, for example, in a staff meeting, am I modeling that here? You know, if we're inviting us as teachers to do this in our classrooms, how are we modeling or experiencing that in our staff rooms? And again, there's a big agenda and like there's a million things to get done here. I don't have time, as a teacher might say, I don't have time because I'm so attached to, you know, but thinking about, well, how could we enable, could this democratic process of, you know, I love the standing concentric circles, or the use of the sharing piece, or, you know, could that inform our learning intentions further. Again, if I was in a staff meeting, a staff of 70, how are we using these processes? So for example, you know, being solution focused. So, you know, there's a couple of things that we do as a staff, maybe a standing meeting, you know, where again, when we gather, maybe in small multiple groups, but it's a standing meeting where everyone gets the opportunity. It's a 30-second share. You know, you get a little bit of time beforehand in a small group. And then when we're in the standing meeting, everyone is invited, if they wish, to share a voice or a little, you know, a little input for their experiences. Again, I'm thinking in our staff, you know, one of the things we were doing, we did as a whole staff of 70 plus, we did a walk-in debate around issues that we were, so it wasn't just two or three voices dominating in perhaps a staff room. And sometimes, sure, I was the one that wouldn't, I was so nervous to speak out. Listen, when I taught, I went to hypnosis for public speaking. That's been a journey, a personal journey for me, you know. The classroom, grand. But in the staff room, my heart would be going. I get in the sweats, you know. And you know, I'd be like, I put up my hand there. I'm like, oh, they've gone on to another point. You know, I'm trying to prepare myself with the courage to speak amongst my peers in the staff room. Really hard, really, really hard journey. But again, I guess the more I leaned in, the more opportunities I had to speak, the more my voice grew, you know, and now I probably do it for a living in many ways. But I think, so for example, when we were evolving, so that the voices that might be dominating in a staff meeting, they also sometimes maybe feel that burden because no one else is speaking, you know, so it's not like they're just hear me. They're probably trying to give a hand, you know, there's many layers to that. But as a staff, again, one of the most powerful relational sessions I can remember is doing, for example, we did a 2-hour after school, we did a walking debate as a staff to just get a snippet. So it wasn't like everybody thinks. Everybody was like, well, what actually, where are we at here? And then we had, for this final hour, a solution-focused circle where teachers were working together in small groups and sharing their best ideas around a solution, right? But it was so powerful because we were experiencing restorative practice. And I remember even just a lot of teachers, I'll tell you, it was a 4 to 6 after school, right? Hand on heart, 6 o'clock, people were like engaged, chatting, sharing. And that wouldn't have typically been an experience anyone that's been to an after school growth park. It can be hard. You've given on thought all day, you're wrecked. And a lot of teachers said, God, I really love that. That was a great experience. And I think even teachers that weren't fully aligned with a restorative ethos, look, teachers that want the best for the kids, exact same, want this to be a safe learning environment, but maybe think more zero tolerance approach is the way to get there, really welcomed the experience of having our voices heard and sharing in such a gathering where we were, I guess, we had that more equity of voice. So have I gone off on a tangent? What I'm trying to say is, I think when we think about growing those capacities in a school and the tension, we have to consider how are we living and modeling it ourselves in our staff gatherings, and then also bringing it into our classrooms in the all day, every day, as much as we can, and acknowledging the tension is there because we live in a society and a culture that is punitive. And so we are trying to grow our capacities for that relational restorative approach within such a context. And that is hard. And sometimes it's that tightrope where, you know, a school might have a policy that says otherwise, or because I guess one of the things we're doing, especially in our year 3 gathering. So one of the things that I do is an invitation for the school leaders, the principals, to gather to support one another. And that's something they often chat about, you know, that idea of policy and practice matching. I think it's really important. And that's not done in a day. It's done daily.
And have you experienced, you know, because you have a good few years now of working with schools, and maybe also you've witnessed the journey of some schools. Have you experienced school, you know, really shifting other ways they were doing things? So like, you know, they say, okay, we're going to implement restorative practices. We're going there might be change of policies in terms of, you know, the code of behavior becomes something else. And but have you seen bigger shift in terms of, you know, kind of, okay, suddenly there is the relational culture takes over, and some stuff, that some waves of doing things are not relevant anymore, and schools go, you know, I don't know, like if you, yeah, for example, around decision-making process, so things used to be done that way, and then suddenly there is the realization that it doesn't work anymore. You can't be doing things that way.
So much of one of my own personal targets is to try and get a little bit clear for on capturing what we're talking about here and that journey in schools. That's one of my intentions this year. I have a meeting with Dr. Anthony Malone, who's my supervisor, my research, actually next Wednesday. And we're going to chat about that, how we can do that for schools. But anecdotally, and, you know, things that I hear from people share, and for examples, let's say, as I mentioned, just the excitement of the team leader saying, oh my God, you know, we were using our stand-up meeting, it's so much better, you know, or using fish bowls. Let's say, you know, a care team gathers, or a group of year heads gather, and they go they go around in a circle, everyone talking, but we now have a process to support us with acknowledging here's an issue and then tapping into solutions. You know, for example, those of you who know what a fishbowl, you know, I've, again, teachers talking about, yeah, when we're teaching in our classrooms, I guess encouraging the whole school preferred practices. And that happens when you have an opportunity to develop them. So we can't just say in a CPD session, there it is, you know, it's how offering the opportunity to experience it. For example, I'll give you a tangible example. In my classroom, let's say post-primary context, I have kids for 40 minutes, you know, or an hour, once or three times, five times a week. But how do we integrate that idea of the voice there? So again, it's something I do, the one word quiz. So the idea of, you know, using a one word quiz, using our sharing talking piece, but again, tapping into the prior knowledge in the room, using it to consolidate at the end. One word that springs to mind now, after we did this chapter on volcanoes, have a little think, what's a key word that springs to mind? You can repeat someone else's or whatever. And then teachers just getting excited about that, you know? So these are the kind of things I hear. I guess leaning away, I don't think it's ever helpful to suddenly abandon a process in a school. So for example, we're abandoning, there's no more suspension, there's no more detentions. If we haven't brought the community with us, that is also very damaging, because we haven't built the capacity for an alternative approach, and that can take time. So I think it's very important that we're cautious and careful, because I'm all about RP, right? I love it. I think about it all day, and sometimes I work in skills and I go, oh yeah, right, you guys have other things on your plate there, right? Because I can forget that, because I can drive forward. And so I think it's really important to be tentative and cautious, and to bring people with us. So that's the kind of that lovely proverb: if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So for example, on an implementation team, or, you know, having someone that's a little bit more cautious or a little bit not sure, maybe curious, not here to, you know, sabotage everything restorative, but to be like, hang on, you know. And I've probably learned the most, I think, from people I've got to work with that have had that lens, because they allow me to pause and to think and to then perhaps find another way, you know? I think that's really important.
So you've recently released a series of Mythbusters videos about RP. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah. Actually, look, we've probably chatted about a few of them here. Mythbusters, yes. So I have a series of Mythbusters. And again, the idea and the intention was to support us with our relational thinking, which I think is really key. But it's a short little input, so it's usually about 90 seconds, you know. And the invitation, maybe sometimes the Connect RP schools I work with, let's say at the beginning of every staff meeting, the idea is that RP is on the agenda. So we have little conversation starters in groups of three, or again, the Mythbusters is another opportunity. So, you know, that idea of maybe, okay, one of them is that, you know, RP takes too much time, and it can be an investment of time and energy. I always agree. But I'm also saying, well, hang on, it's like I just mentioned, the one word quiz, you know, it's the way I'm thinking about a situation. I mightn't have the time to have a half an hour conversation, but I'm driving home, I'm not thinking, how dare he or she do that? Who does she think he is? I'm thinking, I wonder what happened where that showed up. And I think that's what restorative practice is. It's our relational thinking first. The practices and the skills and the language are really important. But how I'm thinking about it, I think that doesn't necessarily do more time. And it often will allow me maintain that empathic bond. It's how I ask or invite someone to pick up a paper. There's 10 ways I could do that. You know, you pick up that paper, or, you know, would you give us a hand, good man, or, you know, whatever frame I would use. It's the all day, every day. And that's what, you know, another myth buster is that it solves all our problems. I'm always like, no, sure, nothing will. It's not a magic formula. You know, it's people, it's relationships, it's community. But I do think what restorative practice can offer us. And again, I always say, how are we measuring success? If we're measuring success, it solves all our problems through conformity. No, but it's not our intention, and nothing does. Because if you were measuring a punitive response on how it creates conformity, sure, we would have abandoned it decades ago, you know, because the same kids are in the same cycle. You see the school to prison pipeline. So I don't think it solves all our problems, but I do think that it gives us a scaffold, a way of thinking, a language to navigate them, you know, in a way that honors relationships and community. And that's what I think when I look at that restorative approach, you know. But that's one of the myth busters. Sure, I have loads of them, Dorothy. You probably want me to go on.
What is the myth that you have to burst? Sorry.
Yeah,
What is the myth you have to burst the more often?
I think it's the... It might be that restorative practice is all about the RP questions. You know, we get very attached to... Because it's structured and it's tangible. I get it. It's explicit. So... And we stick to that. We're like, these are the questions. This is restorative practice. And of course... it's around that, all the things we spoke about already, that culture and how we bring it into our all day, every day. And again, the questions are really helpful. But, you know, if we don't understand the intention of the questions, for example, in that the restorative detention I mentioned, if we don't understand that it's the intention is empathy and sharing each other's story and listening, and again looking at how we can move forward, then I think they're misunderstood, you know. And so I guess the empathy and community and accountability is relevant in the exchanges using, let's say, tools such as restorative questions, but it's also relevant in the all day, every day. And I think it's really trying to support people in understanding that, you know.
As a practitioner, what was the hardest lesson that you got on the way, or one of the hardest lessons? And what was the most helpful piece of advice you got on the way?
The hardest lessons. I guess one of the things for me personally is that idea of, you know, maybe some of you can relate to this listening, but that compassion burnout, you know, like trying to think about restorative practice as, well, it's actually me, you know, how am I thinking, how am I showing up? Not, you know, it's kind of like maybe the hardest lesson, okay, might be being restorative with myself. I'm still learning it. Do you know that idea of thinking, you know, restoratively for me, you know, and I'm probably much better at doing that for others, you know, and they say you teach what you most need to learn, right? And I think that might be true in that regard, you know. That's a lesson. Or let's say if I'm, you know, that idea of making mistakes, you won't always get it right. You know, that's one thing that for sure, you know, because you invite people into spaces sometimes, let's say, especially when I used to do more facilitation. So sometimes for a school, if there was a very serious issue, and again, they might have invited me to come in. And that's a lot of preparation. And that's a school might say, no, we want, just, I'm like, if we can't honor the preparation involved, then it wouldn't be restorative and I wouldn't be the right person for it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, just being cautious around your, you know, bringing people into vulnerable spaces, you know, and just trying to really take care to honor that, you know. And I love what you said about the voluntary consent and trying to be really cautious around that, or careful, and to honor that as much as you could in the constraints of maybe a school wants something to happen, you know. I don't know. I think for me personally, the lesson is still live, is being restorative with me, not give myself a terrible time, you know, if I do something wrong. And again, that's, you know, one of the things of restorative practice is always trying to separate, you know, when things go wrong, look at the behavior, what's happened from the person, but, you know, probably still feeling, you know, I guess, you know, how would I say, you know, not that my identity isn't attached to this either, you know, especially when I do this work, you know, have I done a good job? But always not sure I did my best, you know, based on what I know now. So that's probably personally, or I'm thinking of this, something that is an example, Dorothy, right? Where I was in the school that in St. Mark's where I used to work, and I loved, you know, it was such an amazing school, gorgeous place to get to work. So I was, I guess, an active champion in the school. And one of the things I learned was, you know, that people, you don't want people to think, oh, Michelle's the restorative person. Michelle's the facilitator. So one of the things that I was growing into saying, look, you know, people need support, but let's co-facilitate the circle. And like to do it with people, I think is really important. And then what I saw was then other people when gained the confidence doing it themselves, you know, which is what we want. But you to scaffold the opportunity. And again, the leadership there, Ethna would kind of like free me up or other people up to allow the growth around facilitation to happen. That was key, because otherwise it wasn't. But one of the days I was asked to work with an NQT, so a newly qualified teacher, and she was like, you know, tell Michelle's the poster girl for RP here, right? She's going to help you. And so we chat about it, whatever. I was so tired. I was wrecked. And it wasn't the right day. I probably should have said no, you know, to be aware, like, you know. And so anyway, I went into co-facilitate with her, and it was, you know, a tricky L class, you know. I remember one of the kids cursed under his breath, and I went rushing, you know. So did you just curse? I have loads to do here. I photocopy. I could be having a cup of tea. And so I remember just seeing her face look at me and her eyes open, like, is this the model? So you know, what I'm trying to say is that lesson was thinking about, where am I today? Is this the right time for this restorative process to take place? And it certainly wasn't. So sometimes being restorative, learning to say no or to pause, that was an important lesson. So now I would always be trying to think about my internal landscape. You know, if I'm seeking to earth the energy in some place where I'm facilitating, I'm seeking to kind of, you know, think about that. Yeah, best piece of advice. So many nuggets of wisdom, so many people still learning along the way. Piece of advice. Well, like, can I tell you about this gorgeous, so the students are, you know, they often have such capacity, and maybe sometimes as we get older, we get a bit more entrenched in that punitive mindset, you know. And I often think, you know, our young people, they've the wisdom, they get it, you know, especially when they're really young, like, you know, and you're thinking about how we fix them. You know, as you get older, you just think a detention, a suspension or whatever. And the kid says, I'll give him my jam sandwich because I know jam's his favorite, you know, and you're like, yeah, you know, they're so relational, they're thinking. But I remember I was doing training a leadership course, and this young man, Jake, was his name, and we were working, you know, talking about that restorative approach, and he shared a lovely story with me that really stayed with me around a community in South Africa called the Bemba tribe. And he was talking about, this really reminds me of the Bemba tribe. And he was talking about how, you know, when someone is born, everyone gets their own song, you know, and that if somebody does something wrong within the community, or they cause a harm in the community, they don't think of the way forward through punishment. What they do is they gather around in a circle, and each person in the circle shares a reason why that person is loved, you know, or something good that they have done, you know. And that he was saying to me that, you know, it's not through punishment, but it's through identity, remembering who you really are. And that a teacher or a role model is someone who knows your song and sings it to you when you've forgotten, you know. And I remember being really, really moved by that. And I guess that, I don't know if it's advice, but that has kind of stayed with me, especially in the trickiest moments. When we look at that paradigm shift, you know, you know, when we think about, you know, the more I learn and about, you know, that trauma and responses to trauma and the brain, how the brain works, we're never going to punish that out of people. There's not enough detentions in the world that's going to get rid of that, you know. And it's trying to look for those therapeutic moments, you know, but also when things go wrong, you know, that we're not the sum of our behavioral parts, like always seeking and finding our song, you know, the gifts that all of our young people or students will have, you know. Kate Pranis, she was one of our keynotes last year. She talks about one of the, you know, the seven core assumptions. But one of them is that, you know, that idea that, you know, we have a profound need to be in good relationship, you know, and that who wouldn't want to be in good relationship if they could, if they knew how, you know. And just always you bringing that to my mind as a compass, especially in the trickiest moments where your back's against the wall, and trying to bring that in a little bit when I work with schools, or when they're you know, in the most challenging spaces, and they're thinking, well, look, you know, no, that was really serious. Now we have to go to this, or they're thinking of suspensions or exclusions at some time, you know. But yeah, so that's something that's really resonated or stayed with me. And also trying to support us when harm has happened, you know, we're looking for accountability to tap into maybe someone who has caused harm. And we know that often hurt people can hurt people. But when someone has caused harm, what gifts might they have to make amends? You know, that's been a gorgeous support. So, for example, I'm thinking about, you know, gorgeous school that were on your podcast last year, you know, Fairs Educate Together, secondary school, who, you know, I have the great privilege of getting to work with, and Claire Matthews is a huge support of Connect RP. We've done lots of things together. But for example, one of the things that they did was one of the students, when they were looking at what needs to happen next, one of our restorative questions, they one of the things he was going to do to, he came up to contribute to the community, was to paint and decorate the a bench that they had just kind of purchased. But he was a gifted artist, you know, and it was a gorgeous way for him to contribute to the community and to have an opportunity to be seen for his gifts, you know, outside the classroom, where he wasn't feeling the opportunities for success in a rigid classroom. So again, very creative. And sometimes schools want a list. Give us a list of things that we could do then for accountability. And I'm like, well, then we misunderstood. Accountability is repairing the harm that the people who have been in it are feeling. And so that's just a lovely example, I guess, of what I'm chatting about in a tangible way. Do you know?
Powerful reminder of how restorative thinking is saving us, or I don't know if it's the right expression, from shame. Let's remember the what you were saying, the each person's song or each person kind of great value and dignity, whatever has happened, and how if we let shame take over, like it becomes very corrosive and no, thank you very much. A last one. What are your hopes for the future of RP in Irish schools?
The hopes, I guess, is, you know, that we continue on this journey. Restorative practice gained a huge amount of traction in our Irish context. And again, CDI in Tallaght West are a huge part of that, too, building that awareness, you know, bringing it into, I guess, you know, working with PDST and other stakeholders to illuminate it. And again, it's part of the work that I do as Connect RP, which I love. And there's many other people doing this work also. But excuse me. I think it's already kind of becoming a big part of teacher training. I work in Maynooth in the university there. Started out as a one-off guest lecturer, you know, about 8 years ago. And now it's a big part of what they do. And, you know, there's a big module in year two and in year two. So in year one and in year two now, which is wonderful. So it got so busy, I couldn't do it all. And, you know, so I now work with the year twos. And also I have a lot of the advocates in schools working as part of that module with me. So I think other, again, I think a one-off lecture isn't helpful, you know, but they're really committed to it in Maynooth, as have other maybe universities. But I'd love to see it more in, and it's one of the things I'm working on now is, you know, working with school leaders. I think it's great to involve teachers beginning their journey, but I also think that I guess a big support might be to support us with, you know, with existing principals or the induction of school leaders, deputies, and that's something I'm personally kind of advocating and working on and being part of. I think that would be key, but I would love it to be, you know, part of you know, for schools, you know, things can be trendy, you know, and I think restorative practice in some way can, when I began this work, and there was a bit of, schools were a bit tentative, a bit careful, because they didn't want to be associated, or P is for problems, you know, and so some schools didn't want that at the start, and now it's gained a lot of traction. People perhaps understand it is more holistic, but, you know, things can get trendy, you know, and I think for schools to really commit and engage and for that to be something that's sustainable, I'd love to see that, you know, as part of what we're doing in general in our school communities. But that won't happen without lots of supports, you know, like we said, when it's under-resourced, and even, let's say, the limitations of, and the wonderful entry point of PDST, but the limitations of all their competing demands and how much time they can work with the school. And I think when we think about that whole school approach, when we think about student curriculum, you know, ORP for parents, ORP for a board, and ORP and AN for those who work as SNAs, Restorative Me for teachers. This is part of what we do as Connect ORP, and CDI were a big part of funding me years ago to do the first, you know, student curriculum program. And I'm so grateful to them for that. And now I have four, you know, for all, it's kind of nurturing it. But again, that's for schools who are engaging with Connect ORP on that journey. Whereas I think we want to grow it further and beyond that in the Irish landscape. So that would be my hope. And I guess, you know, it doesn't happen by accident, or it doesn't happen by one-offs, you know, it's the long-term kind of journey, you know, for sustainability and for internal leadership and capacity. And if we link it into existing educational structures, so one of the things that we try and do here as well with our school leaders as well, link it into that school development plan, you know, it has to be informed by the quality implementation frameworks. So it's not an add-on, but it's part of the existing structures within a school and how we're seeking to grow and implement our planning within our school. So informed by that, you know, an SSE process, you know, if it's if it emerges like that's a need, the school self-evaluation process informed by, you know, the layoffs document. And that's one of the things I'm trying to do, you know, looking at our schools document, linking that together, the wellbeing policy framework. I think that's really key for us to grow that long-term sustainable approach in schools.
Is there anything that you didn't get to say that you would love to say to close?
I would love to honour Claire Casey before we close. She's one of my favourite humans, maybe the most restorative individual I ever get to meet in my life. And she coordinates the programme, and George Best is a gorgeous soul within that too. So I'd really like to take the opportunity to just thank Claire, well, for her gorgeous friendship, but also for her vision and her big heart, you know, and all she does around restorative practice, you know. I would just like to acknowledge that, you know, explicitly. That's what I'd be dying to say before we close. And thank you so much, Dorothy, you know, for the gorgeous work you do too. It's been great to get to chat today.
Well, thank you very much, Michelle. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed our podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our show.